What restaurant chains did best in 2021? Hello, this is Jonathan Mays, Editor-in-Chief of Restaurant Business. And in this week's episode of A Deeper Dive, it is our annual look at the Technomic Top 500 Chain Restaurant Report, featuring Technomic Managing Principal Joe Pollack. The 500 largest restaurant chains grew sales by 18% in 2021 and more than 8% over 2019, effectively recovering from the pandemic. They generated $361.2 billion in total sales. Joe talks about why they've been able to grow more quickly than anybody anticipated back in March of 2020. We also talk extensively about what sectors did best, notably fine dining, along with some of the biggest fast food chains in the United States. Among the companies we talk about in the podcast include McDonald's, Burger King, and of course, Chick-fil-A. We're talking top 500 this week on A Deeper Dive, so please have a listen. All right, I'm here with Joe Pollack. Joe, welcome to the podcast, sir.
Thank you, sir.
So we're talking top 500 today. The new list is out. What are the things that stand out to you looking at that list issue?
I think the big thing right now is that on an aggregate basis, the top 500 has surpassed 2019 levels, actually by a pretty significant amount. I think by about 9%. So that is, you know, that's a big, big, big number. So, you know, we've recovered from the pandemic from a top 500 perspective, which is great news for the industry. Now, a lot of that certainly is because of inflation, but regardless, you know, the industry has certainly improved to a point where we've recovered from what has been the worst point, I think, in history for the overall restaurant industry.
Yeah. Would you have, I mean, the recovery of the industry has been a lot quicker than we anticipated. And again, you mentioned price, but still, people are spending a lot of money at restaurants right now.
You know, it's pent up demand too. I mean, after sitting at home for 12 months, starting in March in 2020, and in March 2021, when, you know, I think people just got antsy, the vaccine became available to the general population. You get the warmer weather, that just kind of mixed and became a, you know, all those factors mixed to become very positive for our industry, where we saw a big spike in sales that continued on through the year. Even when we had Delta variant in August and September, and then when Omicron happened in December, yeah, we saw some tailing off, but still very strong numbers on a year-over-year basis, at least, where consumers continue to say, you know, we're going to, you know, order, even if we may not sit down in a restaurant, we may order out, get delivery, go through the drive-through. So again, it's a very positive situation for the industry. Just shows that food service and going out to restaurants and ingrained in the consumers' habits and their mindsets. Mm-hmm. And that's, it's going to continue to be, even with something that's as drastic as a pandemic, that, you know, we're given the opportunity, they're going to use restaurants and they're going to continue to do so going forward.
Yeah. Let's talk about one particular sector that really seemed to have a good year, fine dining.
Yeah.
Looking at from an annual perspective, annual sales change of 57% last year, that was higher than any other sector of the industry. Total sales growth just year over year was 18%. Obviously, that both numbers are a little bit deceiving given how bad 2020 was, but still. Fine dining on balance had a really, really good 2021. There was a real strong rebound. And a lot of those chains are well up above of 2019 levels. I mean, Cooper's Hawk, STK, a few other companies like that have really, really had really good years. What was going on?
Again, pent up demand. And people had cash last year because they saved it up during the pandemic. And when they wanted to go out to eat, they didn't want to go play someplace special and are willing to spend money in doing so. So you look at the, you know, the steak players, not just on the fine dining side, but even when you look in casual dining, when people think about steak, they think about special occasion. They think about doing something special for themselves, and steak overall did very well. And on the fine dining side, people, you know, certainly splurged and went to those type of locations. And keep in mind, you know, fine dining did very well last year, and business dining didn't recover last year. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a lot of business travel that recovered. So this is in spite of business travel still being down. So they have a lot more runway to pick up or to use to continue on growth going into 2022.
Yeah. Well, here's my theory. And I mean, if you look at the 5-year average, so I'm going through your guys' presentation right now and looking at some numbers. So fast casual over the last 5 years, 7.7% average growth. That's, you would expect that given how much growth there is in that sector. Quick service, 4.5%, which is kind of surprising to me how strong that is. Maybe it shouldn't be. But, you know, quick service has had a real strong few years. Fine dining, 1.8%. And then casual dining flat on an average basis over the past 5 years, and mid-scale down 0.4%. So it looks like what we're seeing is sort of a divergence of the industry. At least that's what we saw in the last few years, where people are going out for one of two reasons. Either they're doing it for convenience or they're celebrating, and there's just nothing in between. And it's really, really dividing. And we saw that people were absolutely celebrating a lot last year. And then when they weren't celebrating, they're just going through the drive-thru.
That's right. And we've been seeing this for quite some time. And I think you hit the nail right on the head. It is really a divergence of occasions. People use restaurants for two basic reasons right now. And we're seeing that it polarizes. It's for convenience or they're doing it for experience. And convenience certainly favors the fast food players, the fast casual players. And, you know, you can get a great meal within fast casual. And also we're seeing the limited service players on the quick service side elevate their game with better food. And consumers are telling, yeah, you know, the food is getting a lot better. You know, one great example is, you know, everybody's up their game with chicken sandwiches, you know, that they're getting to a point where, you know, there's a lot of blurring between fast casual and QSR. So, and they're offering that in a convenient format. So consumers are more comfortable getting that type of food in a fast format. But then there's also the experiences when they want to spend some time, and that's, again, they're willing to invest more money, invest more time. And that's where the higher end players are at advantage. And that's what I'd kind of call the polished casual, higher end of casual dining and then fine dining. So in the middle, it's a little bit more difficult, a lot more competitive as well. And we know a lot of those players are looking more at the convenience side, where they're doing more delivery. They're doing a lot more curbside as a way of competing in this marketplace. You know, the days of people having the time to go to a sit down restaurant on a Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday night, those days are gone. People are just very busy, and to invest the time of an hour and a half, 2 hours to have a meal is a lot more difficult. So, you know, what can those type of players that sit down restaurants and have participated in those days and that day part, what can they do to be more relevant? And again, it's about delivery and curbside.
Yeah. Yeah. And in fairness, I think most fast food restaurants to me aren't necessarily, especially, I don't know if we ever, unless you have nowhere else to go, I don't know what's the point in sitting down and eating in a fast food restaurant. And I generally prefer eating in restaurants. Otherwise, I don't feel like I'm eating out. But I mean, most of those aren't really built for sort of comfort or experience or anything like that. I mean, you have certain subsegments that are, but for the most part, they're not really experiences. They're designed specifically to get you in and out. And you know, consumers are definitely following what these restaurants have been built for. You know, I mean, dine-in fast food obviously is not completely dead, but I don't, you know, it's not going back to anywhere near what it was before the pandemic.
Absolutely. I can agree with that. I think we can both agree to that. You know, we see a lot of the QSR players going to units that have minimal seating or no seating at all, realizing that their consumer is on the go and they just want to pick up something and either take it back home to their offices or eat it in their car. And that's what that practice has become more and more prevalent today.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned blurring of the lines, but especially between fast casual and quick service. So I'm going to throw this one out there to you. When are we going to just dispense with this whole fast casual term nonsense? Because what's the difference between a Shake Shack with a drive-through and a Culver's, besides probably about $20 for a family of four? What's the difference? I think between, you know, even like a Subway and a Chipotle, besides the menu and you know, and maybe quality. I mean, like, these lines are so blurry at this particular point between those two sectors. that it's almost impossible to really even, I can't even tell you, and I've been covering this business for a while, and I still can't really fully tell you what's the difference between a fast casual chain and a quick service.
Yeah, we typically use check average as a delineation, but that's even blurring today.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think at some point we will probably put those together or come up with some new type of segmentation, but there is really a lot more blurring today, especially as the nature of the business is changing. When you look at, you know, delivery becoming a bit bigger portion, we used to say in the past that, well, if you look at fast casual was a more on-premise business than the QSR, but now we know that's changing as well. And we also used to say that fast casual also definitely didn't have drive-thru as well. We know that's changing. Mm-hmm. So I think at some point we'll start merging those two together. We used to say, again, to check average, but it used to be one of those things too that, well, you know it when you see it, you know, the old mm-hmm. Supreme Court definition, but that's changing too. Because yeah. You see some QSR units that are certainly very attractive and have the same ambiance today that a fast casual restaurant. So I think at some point we'll probably merge them or come up with some new type of segmentation or a determination of breaking out limited service.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we call Chick-fil-A QSR, we call Culver's QSR, but we call Shake Shack fast casual, and we call Raising Cane's fast casual. And I mean, again, I mean, especially like even like Chick-fil-A's check average is going up there. Right. And it is not, you know, it is not really a cheap option. I don't know that there's any real discernible difference in terms of check average between, yeah. There's not a whole lot. I have to get the numbers in front of me between Chick-fil-A and Raising Cane's. And they're both really just drive-through concepts. And I don't know, that's just a personal
right. Yeah, no, and you're absolutely right. It's interesting mm-hmm. too that how many calls we get from executives from some of these companies saying we're fast casual.
Yeah, no, you're not. Why no, you're not? Well, I can't really say why.
Well, we give them a reason of why we think they are, and sometimes it satisfies them, and sometimes it doesn't. But you're right. There's a lot more blurring happening when we determined what fast casual was, and this was a definition we developed 20 years ago, and it's evolved over that time period. There was definitely a delineation, and there was definitely a line between the two, but that's certainly become a lot more blurry over the past. It's called 8 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm. So I guess getting back to now that I'm done with that particular thing. So getting back, I think, to some of the companies on the top 500 and probably the biggest move in the top 10 is Dunkin' overtaken Burger King,
yeah,
which is interesting to me. I mean, Dunkin' has had really a very good long run of growth. They've got a lot of white space still in the United States, and you could definitely see some real long-term growth potential for them. And on the other hand, Burger King sort of has had a couple of years and has now really fallen behind their competitors. What do you make of that?
Yeah, well, you know, as you said, Burger King's had some problems. You know, there's a lot of competition in that burger category and always has been. But Dunkin', and you're right, they have a lot of runway for growth. They have a lot of local and regional areas they haven't quite penetrated yet. Very flexible type of format, beverage oriented. And we know that coffee/tea, especially beverage category continues to grow. So, you know, they're optimally positioned to continue that growth moving forward as consumers continue to look at beverages as something of a treat and they're willing to splurge for. Still, you know, $5-$6 for a specialty beverage, you know, that's not something that's keeping them away from buying those products. So, you know, they're definitely in the right space for growth over the next few years.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk McDonald's for one real quick minute, because they had actually McDonald's and Subway, but McDonald's in particular. They had a fascinating year last year because they declined, and it's not getting any attention, but they closed like 400 restaurants last year. They're down nearly 2%, and nobody outside of Subway in the top, if I'm looking at the numbers, where would I have to go? I'd have to go all the way down to, well, Jimmy John's went down 1.8%. So nobody like outside of Subway in the top 40. has had that level of unit closures on a percent basis. And certainly outside of Subway, nobody had that many unit closures. I think even in the top 500, but their sales grew 13.4%. They added $5 billion in sales off 400 fewer locations in the United States. Yep. That's a really nice year, I think, if you're an individual franchise owner, despite a number of the challenges. I mean, they're basically making a lot more money than they did the year before.
Yeah. And you know, when you look historically, if you go back pre-pandemic, you're looking at Chanos growing anywhere from 3 to 5% annually in the U.S. So definitely a banner year for McDonald's, you know, new products. They've added, you know, the premium chicken sandwich to their menu. But I think also just consumers, given the whole pandemic situation, are looking for something safe. And what I mean by safe, it's something that, you know, they think about comfort and something that's they know. And what do they know and what do they think is a safe option is certainly McDonald's. Let's go with, you know, the option that we're familiar with. And we know they're doing everything right from, keeping me personally safe, and they're doing all the right things from a community perspective, doing the right things relative to social responsibility, all those things that are important to the consumer. I think that all is paying dividends right now.
Mm-hmm. So like similarly, I mean, Subway, their sales were up 13% last year. Now that said, I mean, that's, you know, Subway still as a brand is still probably $900 million lower than what it was before the pandemic.
Right.
But they closed, another 1,100 units in 2021, down like 5%. Obviously, they still have more units to go. But, you know, so how would you describe it? That was a pretty decent recovery, I think, for them, even if they haven't quite come back.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think it's they did their menu re-engineering with positioning it with improved ingredients, improved products. So that is, you know, being up 13%, closing as many units as they have is something that they should be congratulated for. Now, the longer term prospects certainly are in question. Is that going to continue to be something that they're going to see in terms of growth over the next few years? Is it just kind of a one-shot deal because all the promotion, et cetera, behind it? Or is it something that they're going to be able to continue to use that momentum going forward is always going to be the question.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what's going to stop Chick-fil-A?
I don't know. I mean, you and I have talked about this for a long time. When you look at Chick-fil-A, they still have a lot of opportunity to enter new markets. Everybody, their focus on service is their second to none. Their products are excellent. They're consistent. They just have that winning formula. And, you know, same store sales continue to grow for Chick-fil-A from everything that we can see. So I don't know if there's anything that's going to stop Chick-fil-A, to be honest with you. You just continue to do it right. It's just a brand that's just so strong. And even in markets where they're not, people aren't as familiar with them as when they enter a new market, they gain brand equity very quickly because that word gets out that they're, again, service-oriented, great products, and people just gravitate towards that brand.
Yeah. Someone was asking me, I was asked about why they say my pleasure. So like when you go and you order a chicken sandwich and then they'll say, you know, thank you, my pleasure. They just say, and it's just like this polite reference that they make when you after you visit one of their restaurants, and why they do this. And you know, it's just sort of part of the whole picture, right? I mean, we've definitely talked about this before. It's, you know, the mistake on Chick-fil-A that people make on Chick-fil-A is that it's always just about the chicken sandwich, and that you could just develop a nice chicken sandwich and expect to generate strong sales. Well, that's not even close to true. I mean, you can certainly do it for a while, but to get that level of sustained, constant, year after year, strong growth the way they've gotten, and they're just they're really almost in a category all its own in terms of total unit volumes and everything else. it's just not just about the chicken sandwich. It's about the whole picture. It's really about a whole picture of customer service, yep. about speed, about, you know, the food you're going to get is really good. You're paying for it. I mean, you know, I mean, their check average is going up. They tend to be a bit on the aggressive side on increasing prices. But I mean, they've just continued year after year of doing that. And that's what service gets you.
And that's our key differentiator. You know, anybody can develop a chicken sandwich, and we've seen others. You know, I would argue there's probably some chickens, from my point of view, there are probably some chicken sandwiches that are maybe better than theirs, but they're not Chick-fil-A in terms of the whole package they offer, in terms of the service and the reputation that precedes them.
Yeah. I mean, I can think about like three or four chicken sandwiches that I actually prefer over Chick-fil-A, and that's no shot against Chick-fil-A, but right. It's a good chicken sandwich. It's a really good chicken sandwich.
Right.
You know, I mean, frankly, I think Shake Shack could probably ditch the burgers and just do a chicken restaurant chain and be great. Their chicken sandwich is really, really good.
Yep.
But, you know, but it's just not about the chicken for them. And I think that's just a mistake. So unit count growth, another thing to mark is that 0.6% unit count growth, you know, maybe not as high as I almost might have expected it, actually, given how much expansion we've seen, certainly on the top end. Yeah. Although, I mean, I think when you have two of the three largest restaurant chains closing a cumulative 1,600 units, that's going to influence the whole number.
Yeah. And all of it's in the limited service space. Mm-hmm. None of it came out of full service. And most of the limited service growth, it came out of fast casual. So, you know, if you really peel back the onion, the growth is in fast casual. You know, you got people like Jersey Mike's, you know, up 13% in units, Raising Cane's up 11% in units, Dutch Brothers up 22% in units. So it's really kind of in that, you know, that sweet spot area, fast casual, that's driving a lot of that unit growth. It's not in our traditional quick service, certainly not in casual dining or any of the full service space.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Dutch Bros is going to be probably the next real. It's hard for me to see where they stop, given everything. I mean, it's really difficult for me to see any real thing stopping them outside of maybe space availability. But their locations are so small, they can go anywhere. They don't quite have some of the issues that some of the bigger restaurants might have. You know, they might. They probably have growth for years and years and years and years and years.
And just an anecdote, their sales are 64% at the end of 2021 were 64% larger than at the end of 2019. 64% larger.
Yeah.
So the pandemic didn't impact them at all.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, it's, you know, drive-through beverages, they sell them all day. They do a lot of energy drinks, which is fascinating to me. You know, it's not actually, we call them a coffee chain, but not really. They don't even sell drip coffee, which I'm just like, how do you not sell drip coffee? That's drip coffee. That's the only thing I drink. But that still said, I mean, the industry still has a ways to go before it kind of recovers what it lost in 2020. How long do you think that might take, or where do you think that goes?
Yeah, well, you know, when you look at independents, which lost units again this year, probably another, I think on the independent side, we lost some more units, not as aggressive as last year. The big wild card is what happens to the economy this year.
Yeah.
You know, interest rates are going up again, which when you start thinking about, you know, cheap money, you know, where do we end up with interest rates? I think this year we'll probably see a little bit more building, but, you know, I don't think we're going to see 2-3% growth in terms of units overall this year. I think what we need is a little bit more stabilization in the economy. That might not be till 2023, 2024, when we'll start seeing more of a ramp up in unit growth. And again, that's just assuming that we'll see a more stable economy in those years. We need to get past this inflation situation. And, you know, indications are that we're going to deal with that at least through the end of this year. And, you know, interest rates to moderate and get to a point where, you know, all expectations are going to continue to go up and to a point where it's stable and less volatile than what we're seeing right now.
Yeah. Yeah. What I hear on certainly on food costs is like middle of next year.
Yep. And again, we dealt with a very aggressive food cost inflation last year. So that just, when you start doing geometric stacks, you're looking at very, very high numbers compared to 2020. And what does that mean for unit economics is also a big problem.
Mm-hmm. So we talked about Dutch Bros, two other chains, two other beverage, well, do we even call them beverages? I guess. Chains that we really sort of fly under the radar, smoothies, Tropical Smoothie and Smoothie King. So Tropical Smoothie moved up 28 spots since 2019 and is now at number 52. Smoothie King is up 20 spots from 96 to 76. What on earth? That is such a fascinating under the radar industry trend, is how strong, you know, that little sector of the little subsector of the business is going. Those two chains alone.
Yeah. Well, Tropical Smoothie is more than just smoothies.
Yeah. I mean, they do a lot of food. I mean,
right. Right. I think, you know, in terms of smoothies, again, it's kind of, it's a cheap way of consumers rewarding themselves. Mm-hmm. They might not be, you know, spending money on, you know, big ticket items, but, you know, I'm going to spend $6 on a smoothie. It's the way I reward myself. And I think maybe in this environment where we're seeing higher inflation and maybe people thinking, well, maybe I'm not going to spend that much on that one item, but I'm going to go to Smoothie King. I'm going to buy the coffee, the $6 coffee. And we've seen that in other slowdown periods or economic periods where we've seen economic strife, and I'll call it economic strife with high inflation, where people are looking for cheap thrills, if you will. And that's, you know, by buying things that are like $5 or $6 coffees, that they will continue to do so because it's, you know, it's for me, and that's the way I treat myself in this time.
Mm-hmm. So one, I guess, last point before we go, you're projecting what, 8% sales growth this year? Where's that going to come from?
Again, I think the chains will grow at 8. It's going to be driven by the chains. Independents will probably be a little bit slower than that. From an individual chain perspective, I think still it's going to be fast casual. You look at the fast casual players, you know, I don't think anybody's going to derail Chipotle, what they're doing with their Chipotle lanes. I think that's a big winner from what they're doing. Others are following. And I think that's, you know, when you talk about convenience, ultimate convenience, you order beforehand, you just drive through real quickly and you almost don't have to stop your car. Just, you know, let it, you know, slowly drive through and just pick up your bag and you're on your way out. Fast casual is going to be one that's going to continue to drive the business. We'll see a little bit more moderation, I think, in QSR, considering 2020 and then 2021. We'll start getting back to some normalization there. And then I think we're going to see a little bit more catch up on even on the fine dining side, because business dining is going to start coming back this year. And we, again, that's one area that's been a little bit delayed because business travel has been down, and that'll certainly help, I think, on the fine dining side.
Yeah. Well, I've certainly helped fine dining lately because I'm traveling again. So
I am too. So we'll see you on the road.
Super. Joe, this is great. Thank you once again for joining me on the podcast.
My pleasure, Jonathan.
And that should do it for this week's episode of A Deeper Dive, which was edited, as always, by Kimberly Kazmarek. Artwork by Nico Hines. You may find this and other episodes on our website at www.restaurantbusinessonline.com/article/deeper-dive. You may also find them on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. I'm Jonathan Mays, your host, podcast producer, and the editor-in-chief of Restaurant Business. Thank you for listening.